Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Project Zion podcast. This is Brittany Mangelson, and today we are going to be bringing you a conversation as part of our Holy Ground series, which is all about spiritual practices. Our guest today is not new to the podcast by any means. I'm here with my dear friend, Nancy Ross, and we are going to be talking about prayer after a faith transition. So, Nancy, like I said, you're not new to the podcast, but why don't you just give our listeners just a brief overview of who you are?
Hello. Thank you for inviting me. I am a former Mormon, and I live in Southern Utah, and I pastor the Southern Utah Emerging Congregation. And yeah, I'm a professor. I'm a professor in my day job. And yeah, that's who I am.
Awesome. I'm really excited to have this conversation. And I think that it's going to be more of a conversation, not necessarily a traditional interview, because this is a topic that we are both figuring out. We've both been on our own journeys with for several years. And the request for this episode actually came from someone who is also transitioning out of the LDS tradition. So our framework is largely going to focus on that and our specific experience. We can only speak to our experience.
Indeed.
But I do think that there's a lot of overlap when it comes to prayer and the type of God that blesses or takes away based on faith, and you mingle in the prosperity gospel and a God that can stop bad things from happening if you have enough faith. So although we are going to be speaking from our historical context, I do think that there is enough broad overlap that hopefully it will be relatable to a lot of different people. So let's just dive right in. Prayer.
Yeah. So, you know, And I feel like what I'm about to say from my own story is like a really common story that I've heard from a lot of people, which is that, I used to pray really regularly. That was very much a part of my like everyday, multiple times a day spiritual practice. And as I didn't, at the time, I probably didn't know that I was getting ready to leave Mormonism, but, I experimented with like praying to Heavenly Mother or, you know, using some different God language, in trying to find some more connection. But I also just got to a point in my faith transition where I didn't know what prayer meant anymore because of those things that you just mentioned, right? Like, I didn't believe that God would make a special intervention in my life just because I asked for something. I didn't believe that my own worthiness could impact God's willingness to intervene on my behalf. And I wasn't sure what that really meant. Or I also, you know, wasn't really sure where I was with God and who God was, right? And so all of these things can make prayer so difficult, right? Like, I wasn't really sure who God was, or I was sure who I didn't want God to continue in my life to continue to be who God had been previously. Wasn't really sure about where I was in some transitioning idea of God, and wasn't quite sure how this new idea of God worked in my life. So then what does prayer mean? You know, and it was this real existential crisis, you know, and sometimes I would just find myself wanting to pray anyway, but then feeling kind of ashamed and being like, but what does it even mean? You know, and yeah, I mean, what was your experience with prayer? Was that similar? Was that different, Brittany?
Yeah, it was really similar. So I've said on the podcast before that in Mormonism, the context that I grew up in, there's an actual primary song that tells you how mm-hmm. to pray. You know, I begin by saying, "Dear Heavenly Father, I thank Him for blessings each day. Then humbly I ask for the things that I need in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen." Those are the lyrics to the song. And so there's a formula, and there's a lot of social taboo if you even do, you know, like if you ask for things before you express gratitude. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's also this understanding that if you are asking for something, but you're not doing everything you can to appease that God, you know, mm-hmm. you have to earn your blessings. And so if mm-hmm. you ask for something and you know you're not worthy of it, that's kind of like a double whammy of, you know, like withholding of blessings, right? And so it creates this really, for me, it created this really uncomfortable power dynamic between God and myself. And mm-hmm. I felt in some ways, if I was living my best life, not in like a woo living my best life, but like living my best Mormon life, I could somehow control God because mm-hmm. I could almost force God in this corner to give me blessings. Like it sounds weird, but there was a sense of control there. Like I had control, which also meant that if something bad happened to me, then I could have controlled it by doing better things. So that meant that like there was guilt because I didn't live up to this expectation. So I lost control, which creates just a really, really weird relationship with yourself and with God. So after yeah. my faith transition, I had no idea what to do with prayer. And there's a lot of interesting dynamics, you know, with pronouns with God and what is God's gender and what is God's actual physical makeup, if God has a physical makeup. And so the image of God changed a lot. And then also the theology behind prayer changed. And when I say changed, I mean it basically just crumbled and I didn't know what to do from there.
No, absolutely. I just want to go back to a point that you made just a moment ago, which I think is really important here, which is that with that this worldview that you were operating in, that I was operating in, right? It's like God, where God made everything happen or in the world, like, and the ultimate source of that making things happen was God. So, and within that framework, we interpret all the good things in our lives came from God and the bad things came from God as well, mm-hmm. right? And so it was really up to us to be worthy enough and to then always be in communication with God through prayer to like to try and control that process, which was really stressful because often, you know, bad things might happen in our lives. And then you're left trying to figure out, well, what did I do? Right. Like, what did I do? Like, how did I cause this thing? And there might be a part of you, like, I don't think we probably would have described it in that way, exactly in that way, in our lives, but right. Like that was, you know, very much reflective of a Mormon worldview, which was that, you know, God really was in charge in a very, powerful way. And it was up to us to always be trying to like appease God.
Yeah.
Somehow.
So, super stressful.
Super stressful. Right. 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 Because this isn't a God who like hands out love and grace, like super easily. This is a God who needs to be addressed with super formal language, you know, and needs to be prayed to in a very particular way. So that was part of our problem. Like our problem was this like need for constant interaction with God, because God was like a huge controlling figure in our lives. Which sounds terrible, like on this end of things, but what felt good about that in that moment for you, like within that framework, within that worldview, what felt comforting?
So I think that there is some sense of comfort and certainty in a God that you can control, or at least there's mm-hmm. the potential to control. And I think until something terrible happens to you, if you're just kind of going through the motions and living through life, and I'm talking like tragic things. When tragic things happen to people, that mental process of like, oh, I can control God by always remaining worthy definitely gets disrupted. But if you haven't had that happen, it can seem, it's like the prosperity gospel. And if things are going mm-hmm. well, then you feel like you're in control and that, you know, there is some level of comfort there. Cause I do think humanity wants to have control. We want to be able to have a formula that, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. So if I do this and do this, this will be the outcome. And if I live worthy and if I pray and if I thank Heavenly Father for all the things and then, you know, ask for some blessings at the tail end, then if I'm worthy enough and righteous enough and do all the right things, then that will come to pass. So I can just look back in my life and I actually do feel pretty blessed and privileged that I haven't had a lot of tragedy. That's not to say I have not had trauma, because I absolutely have. But as far as like premature death that's hit close, or, you know, massive job loss or disability, or just, you know, really life altering things, I didn't have to face any of those as a Mormon. And so it's easy to just kind of pat yourself on the back and think that that's because you're so righteous, right? Like, I was a really, really good Mormon and it was terrible.
So in my life, you know, and I've mentioned this before, when I was 17, my mom died by suicide. And there was a period between when she had, when that process began. And then she was in the hospital in a coma for several weeks. And I was just convinced, at this time that like, that while she was in the hospital and it seemed like she still had chance at life, that, that of course God was going to save my mother. I had prayed like every day, multiple times a day, my whole life, for Heavenly Father to like heal my mother's mental health problems. And I felt like at some point, like God was going to really make that happen, which I now understand is super ableist and just a really put a lot of pressure and unfair expectation on her to just not have mental health problems, which was not a thing that she could do. And I remember just being so convinced during this time when she was in a coma in the hospital that like, this is what God has promised me, right? God has promised me that he will make my mother well. And I believe that more or less until she died, like until the day she died. And because every lesson manual, every primary story, right? Like when you're righteous, when you're really trying to live a righteous life, good things will happen. And it's not that, that my mother's death, right, caused a reframe, a bit of a reframe, not a tremendous amount of reframe, but some reframe which allowed for the fact that like bad things could happen to good people and we didn't necessarily know what it meant. But just this idea that we could control God through our actions and prayer had been such a powerful and forceful narrative in my life. Which, while I was very sad and upset when my mother was in the hospital, but I also had just like this tremendous hope that everything would work out. And when it didn't, I think I was a little bit lost there, because it didn't feel like the story was playing out as I had hoped. But I also then went back to that narrative, you know, right? Like, yes, this terrible thing happened, and I'm not even sure how I worked that out in my mind exactly, but like, that it didn't break the whole thing.
it was still a disruption.
It was very much a disruption, because it's like, well, how, and then I think that the answer that I came to was, well, God must not work that way exactly. But I still lived as though that was true. Like, it was just such a powerful narrative that it could continue to impact. And I think, I think this is key. It could continue to impact my life in very strong ways, even in the face of overwhelming evidence that that narrative was not true. And a lot of this did center around prayer. Like I was praying regularly. I was praying regularly for very specific things to happen, and I was awaiting those very specific outcomes. Yeah, I guess I just feel myself paying attention to the sense that, like, even in the face of overwhelming evidence that this narrative was not true, I was holding on to it anyway.
And
I think that's the case with so many things, as we have discovered in deconstructing and reconstructing our faith.
Because you're giving up a lot, right? When your thinking shifts and you go from that, I can control God, to then like, oh, bad things happen to good people. And it doesn't matter if I'm praying, not praying, praying the right way, praying to the right God, doing the right things. And I should be, you know, air quoting around right.
Yeah.
but you're giving up a lot. So can you verbalize some of those things that we give up when we shift our thinking?
Yeah. Because even if that like meaning making framework is not awesome, it's still what we've got, right? It's like, I didn't have another way of making meaning of this event in my life. And I think I did carry a lot of guilt for a long time because I felt like maybe I had caused it in one way or another. You know, and I think within that meaning-making framework, that would make a lot of sense, right? Something terrible happens in your life. Well, you must have done something terrible. And even though I had a lot of people telling me in my life that like my mother's death had really been about her illness, you know, it was also just really hard to internalize, because if that narrative wasn't true, then like the whole house was going to fall. My whole house of faith was going to fall down. And I just didn't know how to like manage that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like as a 17-year-old, how do you manage that? You know, especially when you're a committed believer. Yeah. So it seemed like I had everything to lose and I was just not willing to lose things in that process. And that the price I paid for continuing that narrative was feelings of guilt and shame to continue to hold on to a narrative that didn't exactly fit my own life story. Ugh, man.
That's tough. It's really tough.
No, it is tough, right? But I also, right, like in telling this story, it's not because I want, you know, people to feel bad for Nancy. Like, but I'm sure that lots of other people have been through similar experiences where some unexpected thing happened. And then there's like a crisis of meaning making. Like, how do we understand why this thing happened? Mm-hmm. How do we, like, you know, within a religious or spiritual framework? And there just wasn't anything else that I had that could help me make meaning of it.
Yeah. So this is making me think of, and I may have shared this on the podcast before too, but I have twins. They're 11 years old. And when I found out I was pregnant with them, I also had a coworker who found out she was pregnant with twins at the same time. We actually had, our due date was either the same or she was due a day or two before me. And so we both worked at the same place. We were friends. We were good friends. And she lost her twins. She miscarried them and it was absolutely horrific. And, you know, all of our coworkers knew that we were both having twins. So we were going to have this big work baby shower for the four babies and it was going to be this big thing. And then suddenly she didn't have twins anymore. And I was left thinking, you know, what did I do to deserve this? What did she do to deserve this? Like, it was such a split, because when you looked at us on paper, her testimony of Mormonism was probably stronger than mine at the moment, right? She was, you know, I was active and everything, but if you really got us talking, I would say that I had more doubts than she did. And I was struggling with issues of feminism more than she was. And, you know, she's still actively engaged in Mormonism, which is great for her, right? But it was a really big struggle for me, because how do you pray to God after a moment like that, right? And after this, this huge thing in your friendship and your work dynamic and all the things, it was a disruption for me, being kind of on the flip side of that, of watching something horrific happen to my friend And yet here I was still benefiting from this shared experience that we thought we were going to be having. And then suddenly she was left with nothing. And it just, it really theologically, again, it just puts these barriers between you and God, because suddenly you're looking at your life and thinking, I couldn't have done anything better than she did, or, you know, had more faith. Because again, the reality was, is I didn't, and I didn't have more faith than she did. And yet we were still left with this reality and having to pick up the pieces and figure out, you know, how do we still maintain this friendship when this point of bonding is now this huge source of pain? And it's really, really complicated. And when you're supposed to feel grateful in the midst of a pregnancy, and you're supposed to still pray the same way, still express your faith the same way, it disrupts everything, and it's awful.
So if we can just stay with this then, thank you for sharing this. That's so awful. It's what an awful thing to happen. Right. And then it's like nobody did anything, and yet it affects this relationship, you know, in all these ways, which is just devastating.
Yeah. And like you said, humans, we need to make meaning out of a situation, right? And finding meaning in situations when you have a more traditional literalist framework really becomes this God that's controlling things. And again, your communication with God is through prayer. And so it's just this huge ball of wax that is so hard to untangle.
So hard. So at that time, do you remember, did you struggle with knowing what to pray? Do you feel like this, I mean, what happened with you and prayer in the wake of this event?
Yeah, it was hard because I wanted to be grateful, right? I wanted to express gratitude, but walking with my friend through this really, really difficult experience, it kind of, I mean, it definitely put me on edge thinking that this could happen to me at any moment. So I kind of buckled down and became more scrupulous in my religious expression. And that was part of me deciding, you know, to be a stay-at-home mom, to really devote everything to my kids. I felt like once they were born, I felt like I had to just continually express gratitude for them and kind of push aside any difficult, you know, feelings that I had. I can look back now and for sure recognize that I had postpartum depression, but I felt like I could only be grateful for them. And so my prayers were not ones of asking for anything. They weren't ones of self-reflection, or, you know, I certainly didn't ask for help. You know, I wasn't inspired to ask for help. I really took on the weight and the responsibility of that. And I didn't lament to God, because if I was lamenting to God, that meant I was ungrateful. So I think that I just turned into this little toxic positivity ball of overfunctioning and pretending like I had it all together, because if I didn't, then I was ungrateful. And again, that just creates a weird dynamic between you and God.
It does, because then you can't, because the expectation then isn't that you are honest about what's going on in your life, in your life, in your conversation with God through prayer, but rather that you're like performing something or pretending to something. Yeah. And I think, like I, at that time in my life, I couldn't lament to God in prayer, you know, and I also, my mother's mental health problems had just caused a lot of difficulty in relationship with her. And I didn't want to be the person whose mom died by suicide, but I also really didn't want her back either. And so, because we had not had a good relationship. And what do you even say to that? Like within this worldview, what do you say to God in that? And I think, I didn't necessarily jump into overfunctioning like you had described, but I think it's hard to remember exactly, but I think I must have pulled away to some extent or just had much very superficial prayer experiences, because how do you talk to this super controlling God and always be expressing gratitude when you're really confused mm-hmm. and in tremendous grief, which probably describes both of these situations?
Yeah. And I think hearing you talk, it seems like it almost creates a dishonesty between the person and God. And I feel like if you can't be honest with God, then you probably can't be honest with other humans, like other people in your life.
Yeah.
If you're not able to lament to this God figure, whatever God looks like, how are you supposed to be honest and vulnerable with people who actually can physically show up for you and help support you in real life? I think that it really just creates this, for me, I think it created like this hyper independent streak where I just felt like I didn't need anyone to help, when in reality I was just absolutely drowning. And but again, I felt like I had to carry the burden myself because God had blessed me with these two babies. And to be clear, I love my children, but it was just really, really complicated because I was just grappling with this idea of blessing and worthiness and righteousness and being grateful and communicating with God in a way that expressed all of those things because I didn't want them to be taken away from me. And I kind of felt like they could at any moment, right? Mm-hmm. Even after they were born, even after they were here, I still had this looming, you know, God is in control. And if he wants to take them, he can. So be grateful for what you have. And that's not a healthy foundation to start parenting on, but that's what happened.
No, it's not a healthy parenting, right? And I want to go back to this idea that like, right, like if you can't be honest in your prayers, like to yourself and with God, it's, you know, that's just going to create a lot of real disconnects in your life. And it did certainly, I think, for me, right, that not being able to speak the truths of our lives is not a sign of health, you know, or certainly not a sign of emotional health, and needing to feel gratitude. And see, the thing is, in the wake of my mother's death, people also expected me to like be heroically grateful and these same things. And this was just really complicated. It was very sad and unexpected to me and very complicated. And I had a lot of different feelings about it. And, but I do remember feeling a lot of strong pressure to like perform enough gratitude, or like, you know, like to perform a kind of perfect, graceful walk through this awful thing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, right, like to be seen to be handling this really well, or to not like be sad. And when you have someone close to you die by suicide, like everybody's reaction is super awkward. Nobody knows what to say. Everybody says the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and then having to take other people's weird expressions of grief and like need to like handle that well.
That's a huge burden for a 17-year-old. That's not
a 17-year-old. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. But I also, the people that were closest to me and our family were other church people with the same worldview, mm-hmm. right? So like somebody must have, I'm sure people were like, well, they must have done something, or, you know, I'm sure that, or she got what she deserved, or I don't know what people were thinking, but I think people were also wrestling with this, but also holding our family at a distance. Like, oh, that terrible thing happened to them, you know, but if I like, I'm going to try and insulate myself from terrible things and then not have to feel bad.
Yeah. It's so hard.
And right. And then how do you pray? How are you like, God, my life is falling apart, right? Like, how do you then as a faithful Mormon pray to God and be like, my life is falling apart. I'm having a lot of like big feelings. I don't know where to put this. No one can really hear me when I talk, but everybody needs me to be a certain way. Like, and I'm sure that, you know, a lot, I mean, what I'm saying echoes to some extent what you said, like you suddenly have two babies and people, you feel like people are expecting you to respond in a very particular way that you cannot perform authentically. Mm-hmm. And so then that gap between how you're feeling and how you feel like you need to present in the world has to be filled with like an abundance of effort in that performance.
Yeah. Hearing you and I both talk, it almost feels like modern day versions of the song Come Come You Saints, right? Like, I'm getting real Mormon here, but you know, like this idea of like people traveling across the country and it's freezing, mm-hmm. and babies are dying and mothers are burying their children and limbs are falling off, like really
right.
terrible, terrible things. And then they're singing like All Is Well. Like,
right.
Just this amount of like denial. And yet like, we still need to praise God, you know, like happy day, all is well. And it's like, well, actually no, life is terrible right now.
Yeah, no. And I think that's right. So then I think that there was no space for lament of grief in prayer. Yeah. And there wasn't a lot of space for that in life. And people did not know how to mourn. And I can only imagine that the people in your life, right? Like your other colleagues who were like, wow, you know, kind of, they also wouldn't have known, like, how do we lament with this poor other woman who's just, you know, miscarried twins and celebrate with Brittany at the same time? Like, right. Like that's really kind of a complicated thing.
Super complicated.
Right. And that would mean like maturity to be able to do both.
Mm-hmm. Man, yeah. This is heavy stuff.
It is heavy stuff.
So we've named the problem, right?
Okay.
Like we've
I think
we've named that praying in the midst of turmoil and doubt and terrible things happening and faith transitions, it's really, really difficult, especially when you have this idea that God is in control. And in some ways, you can control God with your righteousness and the things that you do and the level of your faith. Mm-hmm. So if we shift our thinking away from that, which I understand is a really long process and something mm-hmm. that I'm continually doing, what are the types of things that we are gaining, right? Like what is the new relationship with God or just the cycle of life and things that happen to us? Like, has it shifted the way that you interact with just your daily encounters? And how has that changed your prayers?
Okay, so that's a great question. So I think there was a while where I just couldn't pray. I didn't want to pray because I didn't know what it meant. And I didn't want to try and pray if I didn't know what it meant. And that was not a problem I could solve. So I just kind of set it aside for a while. And then I was asked. But I probably did pray on impulse sometimes because it had been such a habit and then wasn't quite sure what to do with that either. And then a friend of ours, Gina, suggested that I should just pray anyway. Like it didn't matter if I knew how God worked or I didn't know how God worked, but that I should just do it anyway. And I felt really silly trying to do it again, especially in the not knowing. But I did start to just feel some relief in doing that, like in kind of bringing a resolution to some of this prayer stuff. It's like, well, I'm going to just do it and I don't know what it means. And we're just going to, that's just like going to have to be enough. And so I started doing it again. And that felt like relief. And it also, I didn't use the formal language that I used before. I didn't use gendered language. I feel much more comfortable these days praying, generally speaking, to a God without gender, without pronouns. And so, you know, that felt like relief. And I think that what I've learned in the last couple of years, and especially in the pandemic, is that authenticity in my relationship with God looks like speaking my lament as well as speaking words of gratitude and things that I desire. I actually don't think I pray for things that I want a lot, unless it's kind of a prayer of desperation. Dear God, so-and-so is in like dire straits at the moment. Please be with them and fix it. But I know you can't fix it, but please do anyway. Bye. Amen. and that's, I'm sure we all have those. But I allow myself space to express the thing that I know that I feel like today that God cannot do. And I recognize that as an extension of just wishing to fix a world that feels broken. And I feel like over time, I've grown more words for prayer. And I like to write down prayers these days more than just giving them spontaneously. I like to choose my words in prayer, and writing them down helps me do that. And that's become, which I never did as a Mormon. You don't write down prayers. That's not a thing you do. But it is actually a process that brings comfort to me now, but not because I can think I control God through my words and actions, but just because prayer gives me that space for honesty and just naming the things that are pressing in that moment. What does that look like for you today? Have you found a prayer practice? Are there things that work for you or that still don't work for you? Or, what does that look like for you, Brittany?
So first I have to say that I think I need to start ending some of my prayers with just bye. I really liked that. but I think that for me, I resonate with writing prayers down. I'm kind of a brain dump person. I really hold a lot of things in and then I just want to process them. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I can be more honest with God these days, because I think God can take it, right? I used to have mm-hmm. a lot of guilt for being angry at God or being mm-hmm. confused by God, that kind of thing. And I don't feel that anymore. I think that God can handle the all of what makes a human, mm-hmm. right? So I've done, a gratitude journal, or right now I have a bullet journal that I just do these big brain dumps that mm-hmm. I found that gratitude journals, they do get just cheesy after, mm-hmm. The first week of doing it. It's like, oh, I'm grateful for my dog. But if I do just a full brain dump of all of the things, all of the good things, all of the bad things, and I actually write mm-hmm. them down, whether I physically write them down in my notebook, or I do have just kind of a running Word doc that I feel confident in then deleting at any point. Because sometimes mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know if I want people to know what's in my brain dump. But the point is that writing is helpful for me more than just closing my eyes and just thinking to myself or verbalizing it out loud. I really think that because I can be honest with God, I am more comfortable being honest with people. In my ministry, a lot of people ask me about my personal theology, right? So I started in this place. How did I end in this place? And I think that a lot of people expect that I have the same level of certainty or confidence mm-hmm. in my current beliefs than I, mm-hmm. had it with past beliefs. And I think because I am able to express frustration and lament to God, I am able to express that to others. So I feel like it is, in general terms, made me a more honest and authentic person, because I'm not constantly trying to hustle for God's love And mm-hmm. I'm not trying to control God. I recognize that I can't actually control the order of the universe, right? No matter how much I try to be a good person, things are still going to happen to myself and to people I love, and that it's not my fault. And that creates big theological questions for me, right? Like this mm-hmm. last year and a half has been tough. And I have just wept with grief and anger and just sadness. And God has held that. And it hasn't been fixed, right? Nothing that I've been frustrated about has fully been fixed. And yet I feel like because I can be honest with God, I can be honest with myself, and then I can show up as a minister or as a mom or as a friend in just a more real way. And so, and prayer like touches it all of those points. You know, I've been an elder in Community of Christ, and offering administration to folks has also been something that I've had to reframe because, again, in our former church experience, there was an element of if you have enough faith to receive this blessing, and things were explicitly said in ways that would make that apparent, that, you know, you need to be worthy of this and you will receive healing if you are worthy. And to be abundantly clear, that is not what administration is in Community of Christ. But, you know, we often get seekers who are asking for this sacrament, and that they're still kind of in that headspace in some way or another. So prayer theology is something that I encounter every single day, and I have to constantly, well, I guess it's easy for me to kind of revert back to my old ways, right? And thinking that I can control God, or thinking that I still have to hustle for worthiness. I guess what I'm trying to say is old habits die hard, but when I can be frustrated with God and just be honest about that, I feel like that also opens the door to being able to just have more joy with God and to recognize that I am always worthy and that I don't need to sell my soul to this over-functioning, dysfunctional relationship with God, that what I have to bring to the table is enough. So,
yeah, what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, you started off with a very transactional God, and now prayer and that transaction was large in part conducted through prayer, and that prayer now is not a transactional thing, but rather it is a relational thing with God, where you trust God with your hard things. And maybe other things, but also with your hard things, with your grief, with your lament. And, you know, that just sounds like a deeper relationship, right? Like if you have a friend, and I'm using air quotes here, if you have a friend, right, and you can't share your grief with them, right, that's not a very deep relationship, right? That's not a relationship of trust. But what I feel like you're describing is a growing relationship of trust in God. Not that that doesn't also bring up like other questions, or that, you know, that would mean you don't have doubts or things, but it signals like a willingness to be vulnerable to God, and then to open ourselves up to the experience of being vulnerable with God, mm-hmm. which I definitely didn't want to do in that older Mormon frame of God, because that just seemed like a dangerous thing.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
Okay. So I am wondering, and this might sound like an odd question, but I'm going to ask it. As we have this conversation, as we have been exploring prayer, exploring, you know, changing concepts of God, and talking about some tricky things that have happened in our lives and how we responded with prayer, you know, at that time and kind of through our journeys, how does this conversation feel in your body?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think it's an important question because, you know, in our former faith tradition, any sort of discomfort, physical, spiritual, emotional discomfort was supposed to be a signal that we were on the wrong path, right? Which is tricky when you're talking about really heavy things, which we have talked about in this podcast. And I think that, you know, I mean, I've felt that, right? Like we are talking about difficult things, difficult periods of life, and the, not just the thing that happened, but what's going on behind the scenes in our head, which are things that we don't talk about all the time. So there is a heaviness, right? There's a sense of grief and of loss that I think I will always carry with me, with the situation that I specifically talked about. But then also the larger conversation about prayer, it was a comforting thing to have a formula. There was confidence there. There was, I mean, I can sing the song, right? I already basically did. And it that made me feel like I was part of a theology that had, not only a formula of how to get the end result, but it also came with a really tight community. And so recognizing that your theology has shifted, it just brings up all the feelings about faith transition as well and losing that community. However, I mean, I kind of joked that I was a really good Mormon, which I feel did not make me the most authentic, best person. And I was not living up to the potential that I had. Like, I don't know how to state that any more clearly. But I was very judgmental, and I was one that would have pointed to someone who had something bad happen to them. And I would have judged them for that. Like I need to own that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so shifting my framework and getting rid of all of that, it was like eating a big old slice of humble pie and recognizing that that is not how God works helped me see humanity in a completely different light. So just because there is suffering does not mean that somebody did something wrong. And even talking about that now, physically in my body, it feels like weights being lifted off. But it also comes with some discomfort because I have to face my own demons and my own theology that was so rooted in prosperity and blessings and obedience and these things that were so easily measurable, right? And just my unhealthy relationship with those things. So I'm facing demons. I'm excited to move beyond that framework. But in doing that, I really do have to face my own demons. So I guess it's complicated.
No. And I think, right. And I think that the important thing here is that there wasn't like a problem and you resolved it in the past and now everything is hunky-dory, but rather that there was an issue. You made a bunch of steps, but there's also a lot of this working out of like faith and meaning that is very much an ongoing thing that is not stopped by arriving at a similar kind of certainty than what you experienced in the past.
Yeah. How does that feel for you?
Yeah. So I've really been working on paying attention to the way in which feelings crop up in my body. So when I started talking about like my mom and, you know, what happened and complicated feelings and even, you know, just admitting out loud that she was gone and I didn't necessarily want to be the person whose mom had died by suicide, but I also didn't want her back. Like that's hard to say out loud. Mm. And I feel like a tightness at the top of my chest and in my throat. It's not like acute, but it's kind of just a lingering sadness that just kind of weighs there. But also, you know, just talking through and reflecting on the ways in which things have improved. improved, or even just that, you know, today I feel like I have a much deeper relationship with God. And I feel like the God I know is not fragile, and the God I know can hear my lament, and that lamenting to God is a real act of faith and trust. You know, not that I have some perfect understanding of God, or that I experience the certainty that I once did, though I do feel like I have a kind of growing confidence in God. I don't want to say certainty, but I feel like I have a growing a something. It doesn't feel as tidy and as warm and fuzzy as my sense of Mormon God did, but it feels present and it doesn't feel conditional. And that's also comforting to me, even if it doesn't come with the same strong feelings of comfort anymore. Like coming to feel like God is with me regardless of what I do, you know, has actually come to be a comforting idea. It just doesn't feel the same as it used to, and I don't want it to, and that's okay. Because that can be complicated. That can be its own complicated thing.
Yeah, it can be. I relate to that so much because I keep saying the word hustle, you know, like when you're constantly chasing after God, and when you're constantly wondering what you could have done better or different, that's a really hard God to approach. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to pray in those situations. Mm-hmm. And regardless of the form that prayer takes, it doesn't feel good to approach this entity that is God when you feel like you're on bad terms. And so shifting the idea that God is always with you, whether you're praying or not, and is inviting you into relationship, and is the, you know, the one that is constantly reaching out, the one that is constantly having the door open, and that it's unconditional. That's comforting for me, because when I'm facing my demons and looking at past decisions, past frameworks, past judgments that I've laid, past insecurities, current insecurities, right? Knowing that God is with us and that there's really nothing that we can do to change that, I think also helps rid myself of some of my past religious shame. And I mean, you and I both live in Utah, so we're still surrounded by this larger culture, and it can be really easy to feel that shame for going through a faith transition. And like, even that is, you know, seen as like, well, you must've done something wrong to lose your faith. You know,
totally.
This concept just comes up all the time. But if you really, truly believe that God, again, whatever God looks like for you in whatever moment, if you believe that God can be with you, that is with you through all of that, it just takes a lot of the pressure off of you, and you don't have to be super scrupulous, and you don't have to keep chasing God for love and worthiness, and just feed into this dysfunction. And I mean, again, I'm speaking from my own experience, but like my relationship with God was super dysfunctional. And yet I thought I was super righteous.
And yeah, no, I hear you. I also, in this reflection, I am reminded that at some point, maybe like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I started experiencing feelings of joy with God in prayer and in meditation that I had truly never felt before. But it was only in learning to lament. But like, that was only after learning to be more honest with God in prayer. And so, right, if you get to let go, and I definitely feel this too, let go of the hustle of being, of proving yourself to God continually. Like if we can let that go, one thing that I feel, and again, everybody has different experiences with God, but one thing that I have felt in learning to express grief and lament with God is also to feel joy with God, which I would have totally told you I had experienced in Mormonism. But I think that joy with God doesn't look anything like what I experience as joy with God now, which is a much deeper feeling of like peace.
Ah, this is so interesting. What would you have said your joy with God looked like in Mormonism? Or like, what conclusions would you have drawn from that joy?
Yeah. So I think that practically that would have looked like, you know, feeling good, intense feelings, like very intense emotional feelings, you know, maybe while singing a congregational hymn or like singing something together at girls' camp, or, you know, that they would have been, it would have been an intense feeling group related experience. And it's not that I don't have good, intense group related happy feelings now, or that I don't love, you know, outside of pandemic times, love singing with my congregation. I get a lot of joy out of singing with my congregation. But the joy of that kind of quiet peace of God when I am on my own in prayer is something that is new. Like I didn't get that kind of peace as a Mormon. I got feelings that I would have identified as the spirit or peace, but this, I don't know, it feels less like intense, like affective emotion. I'd still describe it as joy. And yeah, sorry, that's about kind of a very abstract, but yeah.
Yeah, no, this is really interesting to me because I think that I probably would have been the same way. I would have denied any sense of lack of joy mm-hmm. in my relationship with God or in my prayers. But again, I think that in order to feel joy with God, you need to be able to express lament. And I think that in order to feel joy and belonging and connection to a community, you need to have some feelings of like, I am okay.
Yeah.
And I never felt that, hardly ever. And I always felt like I should be doing more. And so when I sit with God now, it's coming from a place of I am enough.
Yeah.
And while there's always room for improvement and there's always things that, you know, we could be working on or whatever, but there's a difference. I don't know how to say this. There's a different weight to it because yes, everyone can, you know, be better agents of peace in the world. But yet I'm not coming from a place where I think I'm fundamentally broken. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, that has changed my relationship with God the most and how I'm able to sit in the presence of God. I mean, that sounds so dramatic, but you know, like sit with myself and whether it's in a formal meditation, whether it's through writing, whether it's through just listening to noises in nature while I'm on a walk with my dog or, you know, practicing some yoga at home or whatever it may be, I'm coming from a foundational understanding that I am enough and that God accepts me and that I don't have to keep bending over backwards to win God's approval. I feel like I've stated this so many times, but I think for me, like that's really what it comes down to mm-hmm. is just being okay with myself because God's okay with me. And that's changed how I communicate with God and how I hear God in my life.
And that's just a very different framework than the, I must control God through my actions mm-hmm. and prayers. Just fundamentally different. So, yeah, what are your main takeaways or insights that you want to remember from this conversation?
Yeah, so I think for me, number one, there's not one right way to pray. There's not a song that can teach you exactly what you need to pray.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes that seems easier, and it, you know, I kind of like being told what to do or having some framework, again, a formula of 1 + 1 = 2, and you know it's always going to work. But prayer is not like that. That prayer is a lot more fluid. That praying and experimenting with prayer and pronouns and images, and prayer can be art, prayer can be body movement, prayer can be an intention, a way that you're living your day. I think that cracking up those possibilities, cracking open those possibilities has been really, really helpful for me. And again, has just liberated me from feeling like I need to control God. And maybe what I need to do is to make space in my life to be able to see and hear and experience God more fully. And again, in just a more honest way. And it's not that I have to approach God in the right way. It's that I need to open myself up, starting from a place of knowing that I'm enough and that I can't control God. And all I can do is just be open to recognizing the way that, God is moving in my life.
Yeah.
What about you? What are your takeaways?
I think what's really rising to the surface for me is that I don't need to perform prayer in a particular way, as you were describing, but that my faith in God has grown since trusting God with my grief and lament. Mm. And that, you know, it's not going to lead me back to a place of certainty, but that, and I like the word confidence here, but it is giving me a growing confidence of God, that God can hear me and be present with me in all the situations of my life. And that is its own kind of comfort, which is very different from certainty. But it's like a constancy that I am still learning to live into. And that feels like the main thing that I want to take away from this conversation, which is that, right, that honesty with God has been the best thing for my relationship with God.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think that really really has potential to take a person from a very dysfunctional, distrusting place with God, and again, with self and community, and can help us move to a place where we know that we are enough and that God is always present, and that we can invite others to get to know a God that values their worth and is not going to bless them or smite them based on their hustle. So,
yeah.
Nancy, thank you. I feel like this conversation was like a group processing, something that really does impact us so much. Like we both said, every day, you know, we are impacted by our theology behind prayer, and in a faith transition, feeling like, you know, I felt like I needed to have all the answers immediately, but my relationship with prayer has continually shifted over, you know, the last 8 to 10 years. And it's just really good to talk to somebody that gets it. And your contribution to this conversation was really valuable. And I thank you for it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.